Rocha to Moore, and it's off the woodwork!
Hello world, welcome to Off the Woodwork. I'm Zach Rocha, director of Sidekick Soccer Academy. With me, as always, Jason Moore, director of Moore Soccer Academy, the former number one pick in Major League Soccer. We are recording this on a Wednesday, the Wednesday after the World Cup Championship. We have 31 losers and one winner. The winner is Germany. But the best player, is it Messi? He got the golden boot, but is he the best player in the world?
Well, Zach, I'm not sure if he looked too impressed with that award going up. I think he wanted the main trophy, which was what Germany was holding up in the air. So at the end of the day, that'll just kind of go up with his trophies from youth, probably.
He's got quite a collection at this point. I'll be honest, though. I think he was the best player. You always think it's got to come from the team that wins it all, right? It's got to be a German. Well, I mean, they were so good as a team, but was there any individual that was better than Messi? I don't think so. I mean, Schweinsteiger was great. Neuer, the keeper, was great. He got the golden glove, which he should have, of course. But was there any German particular player that was better than Messi? I say no.
Yeah, I don't even know if I necessarily would have pinned it on Germany, somebody, because I think the reason they won it is because they were the best team collectively. But like you said, there's nobody with that flair. Maybe like on the Netherlands, you have Robin, who I thought had a really good tournament. Had that flair, but at the end of the day, I think Messi, carried that team on his back all the way. Even though they just squeezed through, in my opinion, he still kind of, he got those two or three goals with 30 seconds left and carried his team. So I think in that aspect, he earned it.
Yeah, Argentina looked like it was just surviving to get to the title game. Shootout win, and they almost got another shootout win. The goal by the sub, Mario Götze, I mean, that was incredible. And if you're going to lose, it's nice to lose on basically an unstoppable play.
Yeah. I mean, the buildup on that play, the bringing it down the side and then splitting the two defenders to bring it across. And then in the finish, like you said, no angle. Keeper was covering the near post, and it just a nice shot in the back post. That's just a world-class finish.
And again, we as coaches, I think, those who really know the game, the really nice setup as well was Shirley. I mean, what a great run down the line. A nice fake with his right foot to set it up so he could get the room to make the cross. He drew the defender in so that Götze had some time. And again, that's what it is. That's why those are the best players in the world. That's the difference. I was coaching a young man on Saturday, and let's share some coaching stories. So I'm coaching this young man on Saturday who's 12 years old, very good player, Brazilian, so his little heart was broken, over the last week. He'll be okay. And similar play, gets across into the box like Götze did, and takes it off his chest, and it bounces up in the air. And you can just see he's dejected because he knew he wanted to take it off the chest, put it down, and volley it in. And he comes off the sideline. And my coaching style was, I'm not going to yell at him in the middle of the game because what good does that do? He's already feels down. So he clearly wants to do better. So I pull him off to the side. I was like, what did you need to do better? He goes, control it. I go, I know that. I go, let's be more detailed. Well, chest it down and then volley it. Okay, volley it with your right foot, my right foot. I'm like, okay, so we can recognize how to correct mistakes. And it's just ironic that, 24 hours later, I'm watching a similar type play, obviously on a much larger scale. But again, this is what we say all the time. The game doesn't change. It's just how soon can you perfect it? And again, Germany was the perfect team for this World Cup. Netherlands was a great challenge. Brazil was a great challenge up until they imploded. And Argentina was a great challenge, but Germany was the best one. And I think, again, I will go with Argentina's Messi as the best player. I think that was the correct decision. Now, that said, let's talk about some of the other individuals who stood out in the tournament. I think the world got to meet the Colombian James Rodriguez. I think the world got to meet Tim Howard, if you hadn't already met him, the U.S. keeper. I think the world got to meet the Mexican goalkeeper, who I don't know his name because the only name I'll ever remember in Mexican goalkeeping is Jorge Campos, the great 94 World Cup keeper. But those are some of the players who stand out to me. Any that stand out to you from the tournament?
I think Di Maria with Argentina. They were hurting missing him. Not that that would have made a huge difference. I think they probably still would have lost with Germany, but I think he could have added that extra flair up there and work in combination play with Messi. Just to have one other one up there that's quick and attacking-oriented. So I thought he was a good player. And then you got Van Persie and you got Moeller and you got just world-class players. But, you know, in terms of stacking up with the best in the world, I think there's they just don't have that those breakout moments necessarily like a Messi or really only Messi. I mean, Neymar, you know, he showed it a little bit before he got injured. But, you know, all in all, there's just the level of play across the board was good.
Yeah, so. It was a wonderful tournament. I think it always is, but this really was a quality one from start to finish. Beyond the fact that, again, here in America, everyone jumped on the red, white, and blue bandwagon. I mean, beyond that, I think even those of us who have been within the game on a daily basis, really follow it, I think we were all impressed by it as well. There was no disappointment, again, unless you were rooting for the host country. And you know, let's talk about that. The the Brazil ran a great tournament, it seems. Again, we're not there on the ground. You didn't hear too many any horror stories, which we were fearful of going into the World Cup. FIFA, the lovely organization that it is that does so much good for the world. There's a lot of sarcasm behind that. John Oliver has a show on HBO, has a great thing that everyone should download. You can probably catch it on YouTube where he just destroys FIFA's corrupt ways. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. Brazil, they were a very good team, and then the semifinals happen, and just self-implosion. Thiago Silva, you're the captain of the team, and you go make a mistake that would drive, I think, any coach in the world crazy, where you step in front of the keeper as he's just simply punting the ball away. You're not going to make a steal there. You're not going to intimidate anybody. What are you doing?
Poor decisions, right?
As poor as it gets.
I mean, it was like the guy from
Pepe,
right? Or who was
Pepe?
It
first? Pepe, I mean, in the first game. But, I mean, the timing of the tournament, Pepe does it in the first game, I mean, basically ruins Portugal's chances.
Right.
We're talking Silva does it in the semis. Well, I'm sorry, it was the quarters, which kept him out of the semis. My apologies. You need to know at what point in the tournament you are to control yourself. This is literally Zidane headbutt in the championship game level, because Silva was playing well, just like Zidane was playing well in 2002.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what?
Well, to have Silva back there, I mean, that's a outside of Neymar, that's their captain. That's somebody they rely on, and that back line keeping them organized, because they were, it was helter-skelter back there with their defense. When the Germans were attacking, and they had no clue. They hit the – I don't think they were in shock, basically. And when they got the second and the third goal, it was like – and Germany's so good, I think what they did is sit back and said, we'll capitalize once. Because really Brazil was looking at the crowd as their 12th man.
Mm-hmm.
So once that pure just emotion that they felt were going to push them through that game – drop tapered off, and Germany got that first goal. Germany's so good, they just sat back and waited for that to happen, absorb everything, and then boom, it was right at them.
It was like watching a practice gone bad. You know, a high school or a college practice just gone completely bad.
I thought there were some yellow cones out there when I was watching.
Yeah.
And they were. It was literally, if you go to like soccer coaching on a website and get drills, that was what it was like.
Yeah, I mean, all of the nice thing, again, listen, you can't have an implosion without the other team playing well. I mean, let's give Germany its credit.
Oh, of course.
But yeah, they stayed so composed in that moment. There was no guy who just was like, all right, we're up 4-0, I'm going to rip it from 19 yards out just because, what does it matter if we miss? No, they were, every single goal was a clinical goal. It was a clinical finish. It was a nice 5-yard tap pass, a wall pass. I mean, it was fundamentals, the way fundamentals should be played, and that's a credit to Germany. You know, and you know, you got to be so happy to see the game played that way.
They're the new Spain, you know, Germany. I mean, they kind of took what Spain implemented with their style of play and incorporated that into the German philosophy, and it worked out well for them.
So in the championship game, again, so Germany, the fear was, okay, they win 7-1 against Brazil in the semis. Are they going to show up for the championship game with the same focus? They did. You know, there was no letdown. I thought it was, what I saw was, it was well played defensively both ways. It wasn't really anyone forcing the issue. It wasn't anyone not composed, which is what you want. Again, we always like to see more scoring. I mean, that's the exciting part. But I thought defensively, the tactics was well done. The ball stayed in the middle of the field. If it went up in the air, I mean, that was clearly to Germany's advantage. They had much of a height advantage. So at the end of the game, when Argentina's trying to make that comeback with 5 minutes to go and they got away from themselves, you're like, well, there's no chance for a comeback.
Right.
Because they need to get the ball on the ground. The only way they're going to beat, you know, that German defense. It's exciting. Like you said, New Spain, we talked about in the last episode Off the Woodwork. We said, you know, who's going to be the new superpower? And you said Germany or Netherlands, and you nailed it, you know. I've been saying for over a year, ever since Bayern Munich, you know, lambasted Real Madrid or Barca, I can't remember in the Champions League which one, and then Borussia Dortmund did the same to again, one of the Spanish clubs, and they both beat them, what, 4-1 or 4-0 in that Champions League semis. Said it's going to be Germany. They figured out the Spanish system. You need to knock off the champ and then create your own style, and I think that's what we saw.
Yeah, I agree.
Changing topics a little bit. Another thing we did in the last podcast was we were fortunate to see Next Goal Wins. We recorded the episode, the debut episode, to a live crowd in North Dartmouth, Massachusetts before we saw Next Goal Wins, which is a documentary about the American Samoa team. And we had high expectations. It had high ratings. And, man, we weren't disappointed, were we?
We weren't. And when I saw that Brazil, not to kind of segue back into that, but that Brazil scoreline, I thought Australia might lose out on scoring the most goals. So I'm actually glad they decided, hey, you know what, we'll stop scoring at the 90th minute.
Yeah, the American Samoa team featured in Next Goal Wins. They lose 31-0 to Australia in, I believe it was 2002, World Cup qualifying. And the documentary is based around, can American Samoa get it back together? Can they recover from this demoralizing defeat? And, you know, the person who comes to the rescue is the Dutch-American coach, Thomas Rongen, who you played for and won a championship with in Major League Soccer for DC United back in 1999. We see him come to the island, and he just changed everyone's mentality. And I think with anything, whenever you need change, even if you know you need it, there's resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Rongen seems to have a little bit of an in-your-face style, which,
right.
I mean, you can probably attest to as a player, but it worked. You know, and not to give away too much of the film, because you should check it out. I think it's available on DVD now. You really should check it out. It's a wonderful documentary. You know, he changes things, and he changes them, and it's really exciting film, really exciting. What are some of the things you take away, whether it be Coach Rongen or just some of the things in the film?
I just think it was, I can't believe they're that close to qualifying for the World Cup. I mean, it came down to the last game, right? So they had a win, a tie, and I think a loss. And they were that close. They would have been, I mean, that's a complete 180, you know, from what they were doing before to get their first win in history.
Yep.
And, I mean, even with Rongen's strong personality, it's like he must have been doing something right for them to, you know, come together and start playing.
And just a wonderful cast of characters, and we'll call it that. There are some things you wouldn't expect. Again, beyond that, I'd say a PG-12, not a PG-13, but a PG-12. You should probably be 12 and up to see the film.
Earmuffs on some of the stuff.
Earmuffs, but that said, I think even if you do have younger ones see it, you know, it opens up a dialogue. It opens up a conversation about, you know, beyond the soccer pitch and about life. And, you know, that's where I'm really attracted to the game. I know we've spoken about this, and, you know, it's great to talk tactics and technique and everything, but the nice thing about that particular evening was going into a soccer community and sharing, you know, just how the game can improve a quality of life for an entire country. I mean, American Samoa, it might not be larger than even my hometown of New Bedford, which is 100,000, but, you know, what a wonderful, uplifting story for the entire country.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So check that out. Check out Next Goal Wins. We were big fans of it, and you know, I look forward to watching it again at some point soon. Definitely a rewatchable film as well. Definitely rewatchable.
For sure.
So moving on. The World Cup is over. American fever is at an all-time high, right? All-time high for soccer. We might even change it and start calling it football, right?
Chopping at the bits.
Yeah, if I see one more newspaper columnist write American soccer fever is here, so now what? I may cry, because it's the same story over and over again.
Right.
You know, offer your thoughts on what you really think is going to happen, because I mean, a lot of things worked in the American soccer fan's favor. And when I say the American soccer fan, basically the bandwagon fan, more so than I think the real American soccer fan, you know, people like yourself and myself, not to put us on any pedestal or anything like that, but people who follow the game daily. And that could be anybody, but people who really follow the game daily, as opposed to somebody who's like, oh, America's winning at something.
Right.
You know, so, you know, where do you think it's going to go from here?
Oh, geez. I mean, they're, you know, obviously there's a little bit of time off in soccer. It's pretty much year-round. Now they'll start preparing for the next 4 years in Russia. So it's interesting when you see the connection with, you know, our coach Jurgen and the Germans come off of this win. And, you know, they're receiving some postings with with Jurgen rooting for his boys, you know. So it's funny how it all kind of ties back to that. And the philosophy that people were talking about before Germany won and what he was trying to implement with the U.S. team and bringing in all the German players and everything. So I think you're going to see that younger generation coming through, and you're going to see a lot of, you're going to see these foreign players coming over more because the U.S. did win games. But outside of that, in terms of how, you know, the youth is going to develop and stuff like that, I think it just... the more one-on-one training, the more youth developments that are partnering with the MLS teams. And the more that you do on a regular basis, the better the players are, the quality of players are going to be coming out. So
we know Jurgen's on a 4-more-year contract, you know, and we think that may have factored in his decisions on personnel to bring Julian Green rather than Donovan. And man, there must have been a really happy place inside of him when Julian Green puts that goal away, you know, in their last game against Belgium. So that said, we know Jurgen wants to develop American soccer. At least we'd think. You know, he had some offers, it seems, or at least he was saying, you know, after the tournament, immediately after, that Galatasaray, I think, is in Turkey, the Turkish club that just throws money at people, kind of like a Monaco where they've got so much money, let's bring in the best. I think some other clubs, some other national teams seem to be after Jurgen, and he said, nope, I'm staying. We'll see how long, but if he is staying, and he is a product of the German system, are we still going to have resistance from the decision makers up top, the ones who decide technique and you know, coaching development and things like that? Or is he really going to be able to make an impact? I mean, what is your impression now? Do you think this is the fact that Germany won? It's like, hey, let's listen to everything Jurgen says. Everything Jurgen says is now gospel. Is that?
I hope not. I hope not, because rumor has it, you know, he coached in Germany before he came to the U.S., and a lot of the German players, the feedback and the articles that you read on them is their stance on Klinsmann is not too high. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's actually, and so when you kind of compare what these players that just won a World Cup versus what Klinsmann did with the U.S., which is great, but you're hearing it from, like, the world champions, and they're saying, well, he wasn't very tactical. He was more of a kind of rah-rah cheerleader type and hard worker. And you know what? I mean, he was kind of that way as a player as well. You know, he was a clinical finisher, but I think he was one of those hard-nosed players and just fought hard. But soccer has changed so much since he was in the World Cup, and it's more, you know, you're looking at things from a strategic standpoint more so than just pure grit, go out there. And that's what the U.S. used to be.
Yeah.
But since the game's changed, a more modern game is not what Klinsmann was, and now he's a coach. So it's kind of like, I think he brings that old mentality.
Yep.
And that could have some people with the U.S. who are actually maybe have not played at the highest level but have a little bit more experience with coaching those type fundamentals of the game.
Yeah, I mean, he...
There could be some friction there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, which is unlike a German.
Or even with the U.S., because, you know, it's kind of like U.S. player going over to play overseas. They don't want somebody taking their position.
Yeah.
Same thing with... He's in the U.S., he's done a great job, but it's... What have you done for me lately?
Jurgen's a very interesting character. And, I mean, let's look at him from that perspective as a coach. Because I think when we are coaching, we are characters to a degree. I mean, I think our personalities run through and everything, but, I mean, it's like showing up for work on a set.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how I've always likened it to. So he, you know, beyond just his... In Germany, He didn't really rub the Bayern Munich people the right way when he was the head coach. Didn't really rub the German national team the right way when he was the head coach. Again, we're not there. We don't know what's really going on. But that's the perception, like you just said, we have. Then you have him, you know, even just, what is it, maybe 12 to 18 months ago, maybe not even that long, where there was the scathing article. I forget if it was ESPN the magazine or Sports Illustrated, but somebody had one that was American players off the record, so to speak, or at least anonymous, saying, you know, we're really questioning what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's an interesting character. He's riding the wave right now of, hey, that Ghana win, 2-1 win. Did the U.S. get outplayed for the most part? Absolutely. The possession was 65-35. But a result is a result. Then, you know, you get lucky with Portugal having all of its issues. You get a tie. You know, and then Germany, hey, you only lost 1-0 to the world champs. So, and even Belgium.
And you look great because Brazil lost 7-1.
Yeah. Right? And then and then you look at Belgium, and it was a 2-1 loss. But again, Tim Howard set the World Cup record for the most saves.
16, right?
If it, yeah, 16. Right. If it's not for him, it's probably a little bit larger. So right now, a result is a result. We have that. I'm not trying to knock Jurgen at all, but I think the book is still out there to be sold on him. I don't think it's complete. And
it's not clear cut. Yeah.
You know, he's done a lot of good things. What are things we know that are good? He's got those international, so to speak, players coming in. You know, the seven or eight guys who are not necessarily guys who are U.S. national team products, but really, you know, foreign-born players who have that American citizenship. He identified them. He sold them on what we were doing, and he brought them in. And I mean, Jermaine Jones was the prime example of a great, great find, and a bunch of other players, and all young players, and even the guy, the name's...
guy that scored the...
John Brooks, is it?
Yeah, Brooks. He scored that.
So, I mean...
header or whatever.
He scores a goal. Think about our goal scorers even, right? To stay on the topic. Jermaine Jones scores a goal.
Yeah.
Brooks scores a goal.
Big goals.
Julian Green scores a goal, and then Dempsey's your other goal scorer.
Maybe Donovan, if he would have been there.
Okay.
I mean, he played in Germany, so...
I know. So that's great, great job, bringing in recruiting players. Great job, I think, you know, to make Dempsey the captain. I don't know if I would have gotten rid of Donovan altogether. I mean, I understood the thinking. It's still... I mean, you're still kind of... It's kind of like leaving Derek Jeter off the All-Star game in the Major League Baseball game last night, to
right.
a degree.
Right.
You know, in American soccer speak.
Well, like you said, there's two categories. You have the average American fan, spectator, that's saying, on the surface level, that looks great. All those guys scored that he brought in. They made it this far. That's great for the growth of soccer. Now, if you have the other category of people that study the game and are coaches and are really into it, you're going to dig a little bit deeper and you're going to say, and even if you're Klinsmann, I think you're saying, geez, how did I get by with some of these games? I mean, at the end of the day, and of course you're not going to come across that way in the media, and you're going to make it seem like, yeah, we were the better team, but everybody that knows a thing about soccer knows you weren't the better team. So they got the results, but does that... That's not going to carry, like you said, the ride the wave. That's mm-hmm. That wave is not going to, the wave's going to end. It's going to crash eventually. And it's like, now where are they going to pick up after the wave crashes?
Yep. So, yeah, to recap, he implements the good recruitment. He I think, did a pretty good job with the tactics. Not outstanding, but I thought, you know, a lot of the decisions he made, they panned out.
He took some risk.
He did.
I mean, putting Beasley back at left back.
Putting Bradley at attacking mid when he had no option because Altidore was out. You know, he did pretty well.
I think the guys that you weren't really expecting much rose,
mm-hmm.
and then the guys that you were expecting a lot from didn't do that well. Bradley, for example, he did not have the best World Cup.
No,
you know,
he didn't have his best World Cup. I think he could have played better. At the same time, again, he is being put out of position. He was a workhorse. I mean, he was averaging 7.8 miles a game, you know, of running.
True.
If we don't have that magical save by the Portuguese defender on the goal line, he's at least walking away from the tournament with one goal. So, you know, I understand he didn't play his best. He lost the ball against Portugal in the midfield.
In terms of possession, he can run a lot, but yep. Maybe you're running a lot because you're giving the ball away.
I understand. I understand. Maybe I'm sympathetic as a holding mid.
Hey,
you know,
his dad coached me, so I got some. Hey, we got some history there, but hopefully they're not listening to this.
Yep, but you know, he. I thought he wasn't the reason. You know, for the dominance of right. other teams by position. Right. But to stay with Klinsmann and the German idea of if Jürgen can implement the German coaching education system, so to speak, the German attacking system of play, if he can get that in to Tab Ramos and Claudio Reyna and some of the former U.S. national team players who are now dictating in many ways the curriculum nationwide, if he can get it in, I think that's going to be great.
You hit the nail right on the head.
There's going to be an American twist to it.
Yeah, right.
Now, here's going to be the fight, and I think this is above Klinsmann, this is above Ramos or Reyna or all the other guys I said. The German system, as far as I know, again, I haven't done a whole lot of research into them, but what I've heard from coaching friends is they do a wonderful job at developing their pyramid from the bottom to the top, if not, you know, they say the inverted pyramid to a degree. And when I say that, there's a clear-cut path to how you rise, whether it be as a player or whether it be as a coach. And everyone's kind of learning on the same idea. And because of that, you now have that uniformity with the national team and the, hey, their fans can identify where the Germans did well and where the Germans didn't do well. And I'm talking about the average fan. We're here in America, like you and I are talking about right now. Listen, we're happy as Americans for the results. But in terms of the actual style of play and the actual dominating of an opponent, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And let's not kid ourselves. Mm-hmm. So does everybody understand that? Or is everyone just, you know, drinking the adult sodas at the bar and, you know, hey, this is a great thing. We're getting the results. My face is red, white, and blue. Yeah, I've loved soccer forever. We're the best. You know, you got to make sure those people are educated. So to stay with what I'm getting after, here in America, you have the National Soccer Coaches Association of America, and you have the United States Soccer Federation. And they both develop coaches. They both develop, in turn, players. But they don't necessarily work together. And so as a result, I as a coach and you as a coach, if we're going to get coaching education, we're getting somewhat different styles in both places, but we might be getting the same license, so to speak, and we might be getting the same, environment. Why is it not just one big uniform thing? I think the message would be a little bit clearer. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, you know, you also have now the U.S. Youth Futsal, and you have United States Futsal Federation. So you have two different futsal federations. And then you have the country split on indoor wall soccer, you know, bang it against the boards and send it up the field, versus 7v7 on a turf, versus futsal. So that is now a fight. You know, we don't have a clear system of play. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, beyond Jürgen. I think it is. You know, and again, that's why I hope, if nothing else, he can at least say to everybody, it's just silly that we have all these different divisions and all these different pyramids. And you and I can even, you know, I can keep going. I mean, look at the minor league system. Mm-hmm. It was, what, 5 years ago with the USL and the A-League? We're like, you know what? We're not going to align with Major League Soccer. But now in the last year or two, they have again. And is that going to stay for a while? And the NASL, you know? So it's just so fragmented in every single way in this country.
It really is, yeah.
And it's so sad because it's the largest youth sport of all the sports we play. All these sports that we're so good at, basketball and American football and baseball and hockey. And I mean, we produce the best athletes in all of these sports. We have the most athletes in soccer. Why are we not producing them there? You know, and it's just...
The system is very diluted.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating as a parent, as a player, as a coach.
As an administrator.
As somebody just eating wings watching a World Cup game. I mean, because really, nobody knows what's going on. You know what I mean? So it's frustrating for everyone because we're not really gelling together saying for the common good of the growth of the sport. And I've always said the more European, whether it's the length of the season, when they play their games, when they have time off, the more that we model that from coaching to playing, the more that's just going to expedite things in terms of us being a more dominant figure in the World Cup.
Yeah, and I think the other part to it, is the whole financial structure of it. So when I say that, I'm not talking like, okay, we need to make sure Dempsey keeps getting paid $6 million a year and things like that, and all the international imports. I'm talking about, you know, in most other countries, the kids aren't paying all of them to play soccer.
Yeah. Here, every single kid pays.
And the whole financial structure,
club soccer environment.
So when I say that, I'm not talking like, okay, we need to make sure Dempsey keeps getting paid $6 million a year and things like that, and all the international imports. I'm talking about, you know, in most other countries, the kids aren't paying all of them to play soccer. Here, every single kid pays. And particularly in the club soccer environment where, listen, in theory, that should be your best players, right? Regardless of financial situation or social status or things like that. It's not. You know?
It's more political.
It is certainly in many situations. Again, a lot of what we're talking about is the general feeling, the stereotype.
Right, exactly. Generally speaking, yes.
There are certainly, with anything, you know, the exceptions to the rule.
Right.
But yeah, the rule here is you're paying to play. You know, and again, this isn't just Massachusetts where we're based. This is the nation. You know, I know in California they use club soccer, you know, whereas here you have your New England Premiership and you have your Maple and you have, you know, your other different ways to play. And again, that's fragmented. You know, that you have the ODP system, which is now starting to go down, whereas the U.S. Development Academy is starting to come through. And who's playing the U.S. Development Academy, and who's playing high school ball, and who's playing college? There, I mean, the more I talk about it,
right?
It's just madness.
It is,
and there's no clear cut system here. So, like you said, can we get on a European model of some kind?
The real hope with Jurgen is he has brought in Tab Ramos, right? That was helping during the World Cup.
I think Tab was
under his wing a little bit, and maybe he was already there.
I think he was kind of already there.
Yeah,
but
like you said, that's the U.S. side of things, and then you bring that together. Hopefully they can kind of meet in the middle, and then it's really going to work a lot of times. It's from the bottom up method, but this is going to be the top down, like, okay, this is what we're going to be doing, implement it, and then start taking those steps.
So I think things that we do different at Sidekick, you know, my organization, you do different at more your organization, and it's great that we're combining on things, because it's nice to find people, you know, in the business who seem to understand it. And I think there's more people coming through like us. So not to toot our own horn, but just to, I think, indicate that we are a little different. You know, that Moore Soccer Academy doesn't have teams, and you're not competing for club championships and things like that. Same thing with Sidekick, you know. And it's such a different philosophy and way to develop players. And I think there's certainly a place for club soccer. There's certainly a place for college soccer being important, professional soccer. But you know what? What about the town player? Like you said, the average fan, the ones who aren't going to play, you know, at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
When they do play, if they stop playing at 10 or they stop playing at 12, do they still love the game? Are they still fans of the game? Did they learn beyond, okay, the 3v3 drill they just did? Hey, are they showing up in jerseys and hey, I watched the game this weekend. I went to the Revolution game. I had a great time. That's the kid I'm so not concerned about, but I guess I am. I want to see that kid.
What's the majority?
Grow.
I mean,
you know,
the minority is the ones that go on to make a career out of it. I mean, that statistically, I mean, and so for us as coaches that have maybe played at the highest level, know exactly what it takes to get there, and for me to be telling every kid that comes into, if I had a club team, hey, you're going to be the best. I'm not really being honest with them.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, not to lump everything in the same category, but a lot of clubs are, it's not in the best interest of the kids, and kids get lost in the shuffle. And that's one of the reasons we're doing what we're doing here and with our academies, because people need to know that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of stuff is just kind of behind the scenes, and we're not targeting any one person in particular, but we also want the public to know that with our experience and share that so they're educated, because unfortunately there's a lot of stuff you just see on TV and it's being politically correct and everything. And that's one thing about our show, I think, is we want to be straight up about what we're saying to the general public.
Yep.
So.
And it's new initiatives. Again, we got into this because we want to see Jurgen, the head coach, the face of the American soccer from a coaching standpoint, you know, be able to put in a lot of the things he wants to do. Again, I would like to personally see him tone down the, like you said, the physical exhaustion he seems to put himself through matches. I mean, that's
injuries, I think. I mean Jozy Altidore, he knows. Yeah. He was sitting on the sidelines knowing why he pulled up on that hamstring in the first game, right? Yeah, in the first 15 or 20 minutes. Yep. I mean, that's and then nobody else in the tournament's having that happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you got injury prevention and then you got injuries.
Yeah. So got to be mindful, but yeah, Jurgen's style of rah rah rah. Again, why do we look up to like John Wooden and coaches like that from other sports? Even they coach during the week so that in the game the players are prepared, and it's hey, I just have to press a button, so to speak. I need to just tweak the tactics a little bit. Again, it would seem to work so far for Jurgen. We'll see what happens going forward. All right, let's get off that topic. Hey, France. 2016, the Euros. I'm ready. I got my ticket booked. We're already past it, right? The World Cup was, 72 hours ago from when we're recording this? I'm done. I don't even care anymore. I'm all about the Euros now, right?
I'm still in a little bit of a depression.
Okay,
all right. Yeah.
All right.
I'm still, that was some good soccer, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But on to the next thing, you know?
On to the next thing. And in case you didn't know, France, Euros 2016, that's the next big international tournament. Aside from the Women's World Cup, which I believe is next year. I think it's every 4 years on the odd year. I could be completely wrong. I'm just kind of saying it. I know it's on an odd year. So if I'm wrong about that, I apologize. But yeah, the Euros. And the reason I know is I got a friend of mine calls me from Texas, and he's looking into a coaching position down there. And he's like, hey, man, put it on your calendar now. And he said to me, he goes, listen, you're doing all these things. You're coaching so much. You're working so much. Because I was like, hell, if my schedule is free, and he goes, but isn't that why we do what we do in life, to enjoy these types of environments? And he, as soon as he said that, he was dead right. And I called another friend who I know has a house in France from his family. And I was like, hey, let's start seeing if we can get there.
Yeah.
I think I haven't been to a World Cup. You spoke a little bit in the last podcast about just getting the opportunity to play in front of 80,000 fans in Argentina and things like that. I think France Euros would be a nice environment to go. Let's get some more Americans over there, even if you don't have a country, so to speak, playing in it.
Yeah.
Go see a game like that. If I want to go catch a game, I'll be honest, it's not an MLS game that I'm necessarily, I got to make sure I go catch. Maybe it's because we're in this part of the country where we don't get to see Portland and Seattle. We don't get to see that great atmosphere.
Speaking
I've heard
of that,
about.
Yeah, I saw the game the other night.
But yeah, I mean, go to the Euros. Go see your favorite foreign country play, so to speak. Learn a little bit more about the way we can bring it back here to America, even from just a fan perspective.
Yeah.
Plus,
we got some trips to book.
Yeah, plus Portugal now has a blank slate, my favorite team, as you know. So, we'll have a 2-year break, and Cristiano still has a little bit left in the tank, and we'll see what happens.
He's on his yacht right now.
I know he's on his yacht. He's happy as a clam. He could care less.
Yep.
Now, beyond that, here's something else. Go back to that championship World Cup final for a moment. Lionel looked upset, at even receiving the MVP trophy, so to speak.
Visibly,
golden ball. But was he disrespectful? I don't think he was. And I'm getting into this now for a moment because I had another coaching friend who said to me, hey, Messi needs to show some class there. And I went, I don't think so. I've been in that position where I lost my championship game twice in college, I have to sit there and get the all-tournament team trophy. And don't think I'm not appreciative, but it's like, get me out of here. I didn't play for an all-tournament team or an individual award. I played for the team. I played for the team championship. And I think that separates Cristiano and Lionel in a big way. And I think if you really came push to shove, that's a reason why I would say, even though I'm a Portugal fan, Messi is the best player in the world, because I think he is a team guy.
Yeah. I don't think he intended anything. It probably came across that to the public persona, just because
the thing is how many people
are judging, people are judging when you're on the big stage.
And how many people have empathy for that moment,
Exactly. And how many people have been in a position like that where they've lost a big game? Like you said, they got runner up, but when you make it that far in the World Cup, you're playing for the 18-carat, 15, 16-pound trophy.
Yeah.
And so if you don't attain that, you have high standards, and anything less than that, especially when it doesn't have to do with the team. I think he said, you know what, I wanted to win a championship with my team.
Yes.
And you saw it in his celebrations with his goals and how much he had that connection with his teammates. And he did not have a problem with carrying them like he had to. A lot of people could have said, well, maybe he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder in the wrong way because he was carrying his team. You know, have a bad attitude then. But I don't think he did. I think he said, I'll do whatever it takes to bring this team a championship. And when that didn't happen, it was like, you can have your Golden Boot trophy.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I mean, that's kind of how I perceive it.
Yep, and I think that's what I saw. I didn't see any disrespect to the game or to anything. He shook hands. He stood there. But if you think he's going to be sitting there smiling, I mean, what kind of competitor you are?
Know?
I just wanted to touch on
he's
that.
He's competitive, and you know what?
Yeah. I couldn't believe I had heard that. You know, I was like, I don't – he's you're playing a team sport, you know?
That's raw emotion right there that you saw. I mean, that is about as up close as you can get.
Yeah.
You know?
And a friend of mine joked, we watched the game together, and he said, you know, Zach, that trophy will be in his grandmother's house, or it'll be somewhere else than Lionel's house. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll give that to somebody. You know, he joked, it might even go in the trash. I don't think he would do that with it. But I think that's another thing where we joked about his trophy room being so large. I mean, maybe it goes in, but if it's an individual trophy, it's probably going elsewhere.
Well, they kept saying if he produces in his team and they raise the cup in another South American country and they win that World Cup.
Oh, man.
He could have gone down. That's would have put, because they had side by side the stats for Diego Maradona and him. And that's where I think Diego, some of his comments are like, you're not as good as me because you don't have the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's little jabs there that are going on. But he wanted that. You know, who wouldn't want that? And the way that it happened was unfortunate, because I really feel like Argentina felt like we're almost to the penalty shots. And this sub comes on, right? We're getting down to
yeah.
And this is where you can't have those careless or any of those kind of setbacks. And then for them to have a nice goal scored against them, it wasn't like it deflected off of somebody. It was a brilliant goal right as PKs. And I think, and I said from the start, Argentina could very easily win this if they go to PKs because they're more technical.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Germany had, and they're good, but I think they were kind of hoping, let's just get to PKs. Let's get to PKs. And what a way to go.
And they had, you know, before that last goal, they definitely had better chances too. You know,
that's another thing that we haven't talked about is, you know, they had some opportunities.
They had their chances. They could have won that game in regulation, even if, again, I think Germany was the better team, but it's kind of like going back
just
to
kind of like the U.S., right?
Going directly back to the Americans. Yeah. It's how do you get the result?
Right.
You know, sometimes you get lucky, but
wonderful
tournament, wonderful player, and I think he's handled himself with a lot of class. I also do remember when he first won his team championship, I believe it was when he just got over to Barca. Maybe he was 20, maybe 21 or so. And, I've never seen somebody so happy to win a championship.
Yeah.
And, he had a few adult sodas, let's put it that way. And it was just a hilarious thing to watch. If you want to watch something else on YouTube that's really good, it's search, like, Messi's first Barca championship or something like that.
Like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, my God. They gave him the microphone, and it was not a guy who should have been... I should have been talking to the public at that moment.
When they compare, and not just stay on this, but you are talking about the best players and people want to, you know, the best player in the world. I mean, this goes down in history. I mean, Pele and Maradona are still pretty much the best. And so to have somebody come close to that is huge. And, and one of the things with him, I actually, the way he carries himself, he wants to really be in the spotlight. I think that's another thing that came off when he accepted that award. He's very humble, in my opinion.
I think so.
I do not think he's a showboat. And for somebody to be that, at that heightened, you know, as far as publicity goes, I think he carries himself like a true professional. Just gets the job done. He's one of those guys you want to have in the locker room, soft-spoken, but actions speak louder than words, and he puts goals in the back of the net. So.
Yep. Now, that said, there were some fun goal celebrations. And I always like the goal celebrations, just like, you know, in football, when it's a touchdown celebration or something, when it involves the team. Colombia was having a ball over there on the sideline with their dances. You had a few other countries, you know, just having a great time. I think that's okay in the game. I think that is more than okay. I don't think that's showing up an opponent. That's you celebrating together, you know. And again, you're celebrating with your team as opposed to, I mean, again, you go back to Cristiano, so talented, but, you know, he will stand there by himself and put his hands on his hips and look out like I am God. I mean, he has his own museum, so, you know, in Portugal, which is absurd.
I mean, how could you not? I mean, it's like when you rip your shirt off and you know you've been working out, like, you probably just did, like, 1,000 push-ups before the game. Yeah. It's like, you know, you're going to want to show that and the adrenaline that's pumping through your bodies. But I think you kind of see who has that more camaraderie in those times, in those their moments, you know, where I'm not looking to myself to go flex in front of the crowd and have my team come on my back. The players are actually running to their teammates to join in because it's been rehearsed. You know, some of these guys are like, hey, if we score, this is what we're going to do. And so that's something that's planned in a lot of these cases. And I think those are the ones that are like, hey, we might not win the World Cup, but let's have some fun while we're doing it.
And those are the teams you want. Those are the teams you want to root for.
Yeah,
you know they are. And again, Germany, I thought they were definitely a team. You know, they weren't rah rah with the celebrations. There's nothing that stands out in my mind as a memorable moment from a celebration. Yeah. But you know, they celebrated together. You know, and I think that was great.
Well,
too.
You mentioned, not to retract, but that game they won when they were up 7-1. They did not stop playing. They did not lose focus because. Mm-hmm. They were playing, the light went on and said, hey, you know what? We're not in the final yet.
Yeah.
And they knew they had to keep preparing for, this was all preparation to that.
Yeah.
That final game. And that's when I saw that class amongst them. They could have easily started packing it in and just kicking the ball, but they were possessing it and had an urgency to score.
Yep.
As if they were down.
Yep.
And that's when you knew that's where the cream rises to the top.
Yep. So another player who I thought, and we don't have to go too far into it, but another player who I thought showed a tremendous amount of class, you know, in the face of adversity and injury was Neymar. I mean, for a 21-year-old maybe at this point, to you know, lose his chance to play. I mean, what the World Cup might not, you know, play again while he's alive in his home country. I think
he's injured when it comes around again and he doesn't play. You know? I mean,
the World Cup rotates pretty, you know, every 20 years if you're lucky.
Yeah.
So it's probably not coming back to Brazil. This is when you talk about Messi, chance to become a beyond a human, a legend. You know, Neymar lost his chance. He knew it.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's smart enough even at his young age. But what class, you know, with his little, hey, you know, root for the team thing that he sent out, you know, where he still wore his Nike hat, so he made sure his publicity happened. But, you know, that was great to see.
Well, I heard rumors that he turned the TV off at 5 when they went down. So it's understandable.
Yeah, you know. And again,
that's got to be painful, though, sitting over there on the.
Well, it may have also been painful because of sitting down with the injury he had. But.
Well, 2 inches, 2 inches to the middle, to the right. To the vertebrae?
Yes.
He could have been in a wheelchair.
Really?
That's what the doctor said. That's the prognosis. Wow. He was that close to being paralyzed, I think.
You know.
Because he was knee, it was the vertebrae.
Yeah.
And it was like, I can't imagine what the, and it, you could see it in the, you could sense it with the players around him when he was down. Like, we know something's wrong with him.
A little bit. Because the tackle, I mean, I don't think it was dirty, so to speak. I think it was dumb. I think it was a dumb tackle. I don't think it was.
I have mixed feelings about it because I've seen something on YouTube with the play.
Okay.
And I saw the guy, was it for Chile?
No, it was Colombia.
I saw the guy for Colombia. Neymar was in front, and Neymar was kind of looking back, I think, kind of saying something to him. And so the next play, you see him knee in the back. So I think there was some intent there.
Jeez.
If you get a chance to watch that, out there.
Yeah, look that
check
up.
It out.
There's always more to the story, isn't there?
There's always a lot on the internet to watch.
It sounds like he'll be okay at some point. We were deprived of an opportunity for him. The nice thing is we're not going to be, like you said, thank God he's not paralyzed. We're not deprived of his talent, you know, going back to Barcelona and for the next, you know, the Copa America and the World Cup and all the other things. Because that guy's a bright future. We spent a lot of time talking about Messi, a lot of time talking about Germany. Well, once their time has passed, because that will happen at some point, Neymar maybe, you know, the next one and brings Brazil back. Because they clearly had enough talent as well beyond Neymar, you know.
I think the most interesting thing at this World – not only at this World Cup, but in a World Cup is, you know, like Timmy Howard, for example. He's playing against Belgium, who three or four of those players he competes against in the EPL.
Yes.
You know, and or they're on his team, you know, and here they are scoring, you know, shooting on him.
Yep.
And then it's like they go back to their club team and it's like, hey, man, hey, it was great playing against you in the World Cup, you know. Mm-hmm. And you, so there's a lot of that going on. It's now Messi and Neymar go back and play with each other. It's just unbelievable. But to kind of fast forward again to the France tournament.
Yep.
I mean, the World Cup's great, but those club teams, I mean, they're playing with each other year round. They're you know, it's like they go to the World Cup, but they're not collecting a paycheck from that, you know. So I just think there's something to be said about watching these club teams play, and some of those club teams are stacked.
Yeah. Well, it was nice that the World Cup championship ended, and ESPN was like, hey, we've got Major League Soccer, Portland, Seattle. If nothing else, at least they sent out probably the best atmosphere for Major League Soccer.
Right.
And we'll talk more about Major League Soccer in the next one and the steps that need to be taken to improve the league. It's great what's gone on so far, but like we've spoken about, American soccer has a long way to go. If you didn't hear our first episode, which you can download on iTunes now, or get us at sidekicksocceracademy.com, you can listen to all of our episodes. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.